We got breaking news. Jack Smith just filed his final response before Election Day.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. Will Haynes joining me in studio as well. We have a jam-packed show today. Rick Grinnell's joining us. Mike Pompeo, Tulsi Gabbard, and Will Haynes will be on the broadcast today. So you're going to make sure you stay tuned. You may have seen the tease. You may have watched the title if you're on YouTube or Rumble. And that is the breaking news. And this has just come out over the last few minutes. We have to pivot this top of the show, what we're going to talk about here, because you love Jack Smith. And we know whenever there's Jack Smith news, you want to talk about it. And this is actually probably Jack Smith's final push right before Election Day, as early voting has rolled out in most of the country now, including here in the state of Tennessee, starting today. Will, what is this update? Because the headlines seem pretty aggressive.
That's right. So this is the government's response in opposition to the defendant's supplemental to his motion to dismiss on statutory grounds. So the Trump defense filed a motion to dismiss based off statutory grounds, especially in light of the Fisher decision out of the United States Supreme Court, which the ACLJ filed an amicus in. And it says he principally argues that the Supreme Court's decision in Fisher versus the United States undermines counts 2 and 3 of the superseding indictment, which charged the defendant with conspiring, obstructing, and attempting to obstruct the congressional proceeding on January 6th in violation of 18 U.S.C. 1512 C2 and K.
But then it seems like when you continue to read that it's not just, okay, you could say, all right, this is someone who has a political agenda and they see what happened at the Capitol and they look at the Capitol and go, okay, well, maybe Trump riled people up, sent them into the Capitol. No, he said just the process of bringing people to Washington, D.C., having a protest or a rally or a demonstration was enough for him to take the blame.
That's right. And on page 4 of this brief, and remember that in the Fisher case, those similar counts were dismissed by the U.S. Supreme Court.
No, because they're ridiculous.
And he was in the Capitol, that individual, and he got those dismissed saying it was overly broad, it didn't apply. This statute out of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which came out of the Enron crisis, so that was primarily a financial crimes law that was put on the books. But this is what Jack Smith writes on page 4. Contrary to the defendant's claim that he bears no factual or legal responsibility for the events of January 6th, the superseding indictment plainly alleges that the defendant willfully caused his supporters to obstruct and attempt to obstruct the proceeding by summoning them to Washington, D.C., and directing them to march to the Capitol to pressure the vice president and legislators to reject the legitimate certificates and instead rely on fraudulent electoral certificates.
Like, I got a lot of problems with a lot of the things that happened that day. I've been honest about that. I really think that there is, there's some bruising from there that is tough for the country to get over. However, I don't look at the March for Life and say, okay, what about the March for Life? What happens if, 100,000 people that show up for the March for Life storm the Supreme Court of the United States? Who's responsible for that? I'm not going to lay that blame on the people running the March for Life. That's not how this works. Look at all the protests that have happened throughout our country in history. We have to be able to respectfully, peacefully protest. And if you don't, sure, there may be ramifications for that. But again, who takes the blame? But of course, this is just another moment where politics is superseding the law. And we know that as we are just, 20 days away now from the general election, from Election Day. Voting has started. It's happening right now. As we speak, thousands of people are voting. Georgia broke the record yesterday in early voting. We were talking about today, should we go ahead and go vote here in Tennessee? I'm actually going to wait a little bit because the lines are allegedly gigantic. We are going to talk with Rick Grinnell coming up because he thinks it is not quite as tight of a race as you may expect. And he is on the trail. He is seeing the numbers that are turning out. We're going to discuss that. And of course, continue this conversation about Jack Smith and what just happened here. Because this breaking news item, I know, is going to, it could easily get swept under the rug. You won't see it, but I have a feeling it's going to take over a lot of your press, and you have to be able to respond. And that's what we do here, even on Seculo, is give you the fuel to be able to respond to your friends when they start talking about this. Give us a call. I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. If you have a question for Rick Grinnell, you can do that as well, or Mike Pompeo, or Tulsi Gabbard later on the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call again. Support the work of the ACLJ with just 20 days to Election Day. We need your support. And join the thousands of ACLJ champions. back to Secula. We are going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. We obviously continue to ask you to support the ACLJ if you can. We get to get this show on the air, and we get to have great experts like Rick Grinnell, who's joining us right now. And Rick is obviously very busy right now, so it's a little bit different. He's on the phone today. And, of course, a lot of you are just tuning in right now because you saw the breaking news headline or you saw the title or the thumbnail on YouTube, and you said, what is this breaking news that's going on, Will, with Jack Smith?
That's right. So Jack Smith filed a response to the defense's motion to dismiss on statutory grounds. And in this, we see Jack Smith saying that the Supreme Court decision on Fisher doesn't apply to Trump because he bears responsibility for January 6th, because he summoned people to Washington, D.C. And the way I read this, Logan, is that this is Jack Smith's final moment to try and publicly say something to the detriment of Donald Trump before the election. And I'll even toss this to Rick here, is that, Rick, we've seen the way he's done things out of order. We've seen Ellie Honig on CNN actually blast him for being politically motivated in the way that Jack Smith has been rolling these things out before Election Day, out of practice with the Justice Department. And do you see these motions as just another proof that the weaponization of the Justice Department against Donald Trump, everything that Donald Trump says.
You're trying not to say witch hunt. I can tell.
Right? I'm going there. But it's almost proof that what Donald Trump complains about is in reality happening, that this is a weaponized DOJ against him.
Yeah, first of all, greetings from Macomb County, Michigan, the heart, the ground zero of the Trump campaign here in Michigan. It's feeling good. We got 2.5 weeks, and I feel like people are really seeing what we're talking about. On this Jack Smith, you know, issue, Logan and Will, you guys know I called in front of the grand jury, Jack Smith's grand jury, to testify on this, so I have to be very clear, be very careful. But the one thing that I will say is that when you read this latest last breath attempt from Jack Smith to throw mud and politics into the presidential race, this clear election interfering, Jack Smith is just simply Adam Schiff with a beard. They are the same person. They are doing the same thing, which is all politics, all made up politics all of the time. And we've got to really push back. We can't have this election interfering. Jack Smith has had more cases thrown out over his career than he has finished. He has got a terrible track record of playing politics and getting overturned, and he's just grasping at straws, and it's very clear that he is a partisan here, just like Adam Schiff.
Yeah, Rick, and one of the things I wanted to bring up, I know you said you're there on the campaign trail, everything's going on right now, and it's, again, just a couple weeks left until the general election, until the election day, early voting has begun. You put out this on X, and you said anyone who says this race is the tightest race in decades hasn't visited swing states to speak to voters. You can't theorize from a newsroom in Washington watching poll numbers. Obviously, we are in in the media watching these poll numbers. It looks, you know, razor thin, very close on a lot of these states. And we want to encourage people, obviously, to vote who they feel like they should vote for. But why do you feel that it's different out there? What is that tone?
Well, first of all, we have to swamp the vote. So no matter what I say, people must get hungry to drag people to the polls. We have to cross this finish line. Our country is at stake. But, you know, I'm on the campaign trail full time. I'm in Arizona, I'm in Pennsylvania, I'm in Michigan, Wisconsin, those mainly, a little bit of North Carolina. But what I see, because I've been campaigning for President Trump in 2016, I campaigned for President Trump in 2020, it's much different this time. People have had it. They see the media that is completely just regurgitating lines for the ruling party. They see Kamala not able to bring parties together. Is literally about war and peace and gas prices, and it's remarkable what people are seeing. And I see a huge difference between 16 and 20. In 2024, there's not a single group of people that have dialed their support back for Trump, it's all increasing. And I'll finish with this. Arab Americans and Muslims in Detroit have held over 25 meetings with Arab Americans and Muslims in Detroit. They are not voting for Kamala Harris. Her support has collapsed with them. Well, collapsed. Rick, now, Jill Stein is still winning the most, but Donald Trump has doubled his support.
Rick, you bring that up, and that's actually what I was going to ask you about next, is that we saw yesterday a business owner, Yemeni American, in Dearborn, Michigan, owns a restaurant. It apparently has great reviews. Haven't been there myself, but that put a video out supporting President Trump. And I think this narrative that we've been hearing from the media is that, you know, Kamala, that's her vote to get if she can just come up with the right line about Gaza. But in reality, you're seeing entrepreneurs, people whose lives are rooted in America, that maybe aren't as interested in the politic of Palestine as they are about making America, where they live, where they make their money, actually work for them. And you saw a mayor in a primarily Muslim area in Michigan just a few weeks ago come out and support Trump. And now you're seeing this business owner publicly do this. Does that just echo what you're seeing on the ground?
Yeah, I met that business owner last night. We did a UFC event for Trump, and we had UFC fighters in Detroit. And we had a lot of the Arab American Muslim community come out for that. And the reality is we have the support, growing support from the community. I would say two things that Kamala really is in trouble on. Since October 7th, it's now been a year, and the war is escalating. It's getting worse. And she can't stop it. They see that she can't stop it. The other part is, this administration, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, have funded Iran. Iran is the problem, and the Arab community knows this. The Muslim community knows this. They don't want Iran funded, because when you fund Iran, you literally get more terrorism. You get more money for Hamas, more money for Hezbollah, more money for the Houthis. And this is what this young Yemeni businessman, very impressive guy, working hard, living the American dream, loves this country. And he loves Donald Trump because he knows Donald Trump brought peace and bankrupted the Iranians and the Houthis that are overtaking Yemen and causing terror everywhere. He knows was funded by Kamala Harris.
Yeah, let's not all forget that even just a few years ago, when President Trump originally took office, we were still dealing with ISIS. And of course, that pretty much went away for a large period of time. Now they've had some resurgence recently, but obviously, there is some blame to be placed for that. But the traditional ISIS, the original ISIS, was wiped out. And I feel like it's forgotten. I feel like all of those things are forgotten. And Rick, I appreciate you coming on today. I know that it's busy. I'll let you go because I know you got a lot of places to be right now. But these are the important issues that are happening around this country. I have a lot of friends. Many are conservative. Many are liberal. And they share a lot of the same concerns, but they don't share the same resolution. And they're believing a lot of the talking points that you're seeing on TV or on the radio. You're hearing people on podcasts talk about this, where for some reason, if you decided to vote conservative, not only are you evil, but you are somehow ushering on World War III. And I feel like it is the exact opposite. Now, you can vote for whoever you want. I don't tell you who to vote for. That's not my job here on this broadcast. Not my job here at the ACLJ. However, I think when you see the issues that we talk about here, and you see it's become more and more divided as time has gone on. There used to be a time where Israel, support of Israel, was not a red or blue, red or blue issue. It was something that the majority of conservatives and the mass majority of liberals all supported Israel. There was always the occasional person. A Bernie Sanders who's from Israel, who's not from Israel, but lived there. There are people like that who have always been on sort of the fringe of that movement. But now that fringe has overtaken and has grown and grown and grown. So no longer are there these like middle ground issues. And I hate that because I feel like there is some things that are just right and wrong. I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. Mike Pompeo is going to be joining us in the next segment. Look, it's important time. 20 days away from the election. And we are fighting for not only election integrity, but all of our legal efforts are really heating up. And we've got some amazing things happening. You're going to have a great new project's going to be launching right before the election. I've been working on that. You may remember we talked about it months ago. Well, quietly, we've been doing it in the background because I can't wait to roll this out for you. And that's going to be coming later this month. The ACLJ is hard at work. We can't do it without you. If you don't have financial resources, you're brand new to the broadcast, what I ask you to do, if you're watching on YouTube, we know about half the people that watch on YouTube each and every day don't subscribe. Do us a favor. It's free. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up. I really would appreciate that. Same on Rumble. Same on however you're watching this. X. You know, just use those accounts. Make sure you're following and staying in touch. It's a free way to support the organization. However you have the financial means, I encourage you to become an ACLJ champion. That's someone that gives on a monthly recurring basis at aclj.org/champions. You can scan that QR code. You can do that as little as $5 a month, and really it helps us create an amazing baseline. And going into 2025, we know we're going to be needed more than ever. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seculo. This is Logan Seculo. We have Will Haynes joining me in studio and Mike Pompeo joining us via phone today. Obviously, it's a very busy time for a lot of our guests. So a lot of them are going to be on the phone for the next little bit as it's just, again, an incredibly busy time. We are still going to be covering, if you saw the breaking news, of course, that there was a new response, probably the final response filed from Jack Smith. We'll discuss that a bit later on. So if you're just tuning in, you want to hear about that, we'll bring that up here shortly. But Secretary Pompeo, the Biden administration, we've heard now, is threatening once again to withhold military aid to Israel unless more humanitarian aid is allowed to reach Gaza. That ironclad support that this administration seemed to have, where'd that go? I don't think we got Secretary Pompeo. We're going to call him back. So hopefully he heard my question.
No, I'm here. I've got you. I could hear you.
There you go.
Look, your point about the ironclad support is exactly right. And again, the Biden administration has grabbed the wrong end, right? They forgot who the problem is. The problem is Iran and Hamas, not the Israelis. Three other thoughts. One, there's been a lot of humanitarian aid delivered. No help to the United States. You remember, we built a pier off the coast that epically failed to deliver that very assistance. Second, if you listen to this and hear the Biden administration say this isn't a threat, what do you think Sinwar sitting in the tunnel thinks? He thinks in 30 days, the United States may be withholding military aid. This only encourages our adversaries. It's a very dangerous policy, and it fails to recognize good and evil and conflates the two in ways that are really bad for the United States.
Mr. Secretary, the administration has never been great at hiding their optics, I feel like, but they're giving Israel just 1 month to improve conditions in Gaza, and we're just a few weeks away from the presidential election. Is this once again the administration trying to boost the popularity of Kamala Harris within the Arab American voters who she seems to be losing support from?
Well, it sure seems like that timing is crystal clear, right? That 30-day deadline extends just right past when the final votes will ultimately be counted. I am sure that letter was not only written but released publicly because they were aiming at a particular target set, likely in Michigan. That's the worst from a security perspective, to be working the domestic politics when you're trying to be with a friend. Not only did Israelis see that for what it is, but our other friends in the region, the Gulf Arab states, see that too. And they'll come to conclude that America simply can't be trusted. And that is a bad place to be when Putin is moving in Ukraine and there's so much damage still occurring in the Middle East.
Yeah, Secretary Pompeo, when we are just, again, it's hard to ignore the fact that we're under 20 days now until the general election. Early voting has started in most states, including here in Tennessee. And we saw in Michigan, as Will brought up, that even the Arab American community, which I think if you actually, it seems like this with Democrats, like when you actually get down to dealing with people on a one-on-one basis and you stop this, all black voters, all Arab voters, all white voters, all female voters, all male voters, when you stop, you know, breaking everything down into, well, of course, if they you know, fit one of these things, they're going to vote one way or the other. What we are seeing is that is not the truth, and it has never been the truth, and it's certainly not in the modern media age, and it's certainly not when it comes to President Trump. And we've seen that even, like you said, in the Arab community in Michigan, where we've now seen even popular restaurants and places that are really the heartbeat of that community all saying, no, we're not voting for Harris. Even though it's always that moment where, again, it feels racially motivated to just go like, how dare they? How dare they not vote the way we want them to vote?
It's really nasty when politicians say that because of your particular race or particular ethnicity or have a particular background, that you must think a certain way. That is deeply un-American. And we've seen this in spades. We saw what President Obama said when he was out campaigning last week, talking about how the brothers need to get out and vote. It's just that's just the nastiest to not think that they're gonna evaluate this on their own, think about this themselves, whether that's in the Arab American community of Michigan or in the Appalachian Mountains of West Virginia. These are individuals with all the human dignity that comes with that, and they're going to have different judgments no matter what their ethnicity, what their background, what their race is. And that's one of the great things about America, and we're seeing that in the polling too. People are thinking about this in a way that is not connected to the traditional ideas that these folks who put race in front of everything else have often thought would happen.
And Mr. Secretary, typically in election years, the foreign policy angle isn't the deciding factor of the election. It's definitely a part of it. There's definitely voting blocks that may be moved one way or the other because of foreign policy, but typically it's domestic politics, it's the economy that really moved the needle. Could this be an anomaly year where the Harris campaign is so desperately trying to make these foreign policy issues domestic issues in states like Michigan that it ends up swinging the election against her?
You know, it's possible because it's going to be so close, or at least it's predicted to be this close, that just a handful of thousands of votes could matter. And it could be that enough folks will care about their own prosperity, their own security enough to say, you know, I'm just not going to vote for the folks who've created so much instability in the world. So it could be. It's also the case that while it's true, it doesn't usually rise to the top when people are asked by pollsters, what's the most important issue to you? It's seldom national security or foreign policy related matters. But it does provide the background and the mood music. And I think many Americans, while they may have other things that they're thinking about more often, can see that their family's a little less safe. Their friends who have kids who are serving in the military are a little less safe. And so I do think it will have an impact on the outcome in a handful of states across the country that we're just in a less stable place and a less secure place than we were just, you know, almost 4 years ago now.
Secretary Pompeo, thank you so much for joining us. And again, we can't have people with just incredible insight like Secretary Pompeo or all of our guests today, all the people that are on the ACLJ team or on the secular broadcast team, without your support. So I encourage you right now as we head into a break to support the work of the ACLJ. Hey, if you are listening right now, and thank you, Secretary Pompeo, I know you're busy, you can head on out. I know for a lot of you that listen, specifically if you listen on radio, traditional terrestrial radio, that you only get this broadcast for a half an hour. We have a second half hour. We do a full hour. And we do that live each and every day, Monday through Friday, from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern time. And you can work your way back from there. So I encourage you, if you love this show and you really like what we do here, or you want to see us, not just hear us, be a part of that community. Whether that's on ACLJ.org, where you can look at all of our great content and resources, or replay the show in our podcast feed, or subscribe on YouTube or on Rumble. We do this show each and every day. And it's really great content. It's not like the second half hour, some throwaway or repeat. It is a great half hour coming up because two things happen. In the next one, we're going to hear from Tulsi Gabbard coming up, and that's going to be a really interesting conversation. As we know, there has been some interesting moves in even the Joe Rogan world, where Joe Rogan has now, there's a conversations at least happening between the Harris campaign and of course the Trump campaign, but the Harris campaign and Joe Rogan of whether he's going to appear. Tulsi is obviously a longtime friend and frequent guest on the Joe Rogan Experience, the largest podcast on the planet, probably the largest talk broadcast, if you want to say it that way, on the planet. So we're going to discuss that coming up in the second half hour. And we're also going to hear from you. What I love to do is hear, we hear from Mike Pompeo, from Will Haynes, from me, from Tulsi Gabbard, from Rick Grinnell. And then we get to hear from the most important voice in the room, and that's you. So phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. Got about three lines open. Stay on hold if you're on hold. And again, the election's only about 20 days away at this point, exactly 20 days away. And the ACLJ, this is a very important time. And look, it's also an important time to support because we know funds are getting spread around. You may be giving money to political donations. You may not be thinking about what we're doing. We are still fighting for you and fighting for Christians all over the world. I was briefed today on a brand new case we're going to talk about tomorrow of, again, Christian persecution happening outside of this country in a way that is so extreme. And we're going to discuss that coming up tomorrow. But you want to make sure you still support our work here. It continues to go. Whoever wins the election, we ACLJ will still be there fighting for you. We'll be right back with second half hour, less than a minute break.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. Tulsi Gabbard's going to be joining us in the next segment, so stay tuned for that. I'm going to encourage you also, if you're just now joining us, to subscribe to this broadcast, subscribe to this YouTube channel. If you're there, over 438,000 of you have subscribed. We'd love to hit over a million in the next year, so that'd be awesome if you could help us get there. Will, I do want to briefly hit, once again, if you're just tuning in, you may see the breaking news item that's happening right now. As we said, Jack Smith filed what we're calling his final response before Election Day. Let's just give a brief rundown of that again, and then we'll move on to the next topic.
That's right. We were very surprised when Jack Smith kept counts 2 and 3 against Trump in the superseding indictment, which were charges that were thrown out by the Supreme Court in the Fisher case, and they were related to obstruction of an official proceeding. And the Trump defense team filed to get those removed on statutory grounds. But Jack Smith's response, probably the last thing we're going to see filed from Jack Smith before Election Day, was filed this morning, saying why he kept them in and saying, contrary to the defendant's claim that he bears no factual legal responsibility for the events of January 6th, the superseding indictment plainly alleges that the defendant willfully caused his supporters to obstruct and attempt to obstruct the proceeding by summoning them to Washington, D.C., and then directing them to march to the Capitol to pressure the vice president and legislators to reject the legitimate certificates and instead rely on fraudulent electors. The problem with this is it seems like every single filing that Jack Smith puts out, whether it be his unprecedented evidentiary brief that he got out and then wanted the redactions out and those unredacted portions came out, is he's filing these almost as press releases before the election. He is trying to get as much information, as many statements out there that he can to try and influence the election. This is so much worse, I feel like, than what James Comey did to Hillary Clinton in 2016 by closing and reopening and doing a press conference and saying she did all these bad things, but we're not going to charge her, because these are in court, him trying to get a conviction that is unlikely will happen. But he is still going forward and putting these statements out as much as he can before Election Day to have as much negative press out there. And hopefully the liberal media will pick it up and run with it and broadcast it into every home in America saying, look how bad it is. Trump summoned his people to Washington, D.C. to protest what he thought was election fraud. So it's just, once again, par for the course for Jack Smith. He loses these cases often. He almost has a perfect track record of getting these overturned on appeal. But he is doing everything he can to try and get negative press out there about Donald Trump leading up to November 5th. And that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take your calls, too, coming up a little bit later in the broadcast. Next segment, we have Tulsi Gabbard on. And then followed by that, I take all the calls I can. And we'll try to get to some even in the next segment. But it's at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You know, we talked a little bit about Israel, our support of Israel here. I just saw this pop up on my Instagram feed during the break. This is from a sort of a Zionist podcaster I follow, Blake, who is become sort of a name in the world of, again, of Jewish Zionism, someone who is a supporter of Israel. And again, people use that as a dirty word, and it's simply not. And it's Blake Flayton on Instagram. He put this up, and I think this summarizes exactly what we're talking about, even with the Arab community, exactly what we're talking about when you start compartmentalizing people's votes based on their race, their religion, their gender, anything. He put, it's crazy to think if Trump had not been the nominee, I probably would choose not to vote. That's crazy to think, because if you grew up like me, the Democratic Party was tethered to your Jewish identity. To describe one's Jewishness was to describe one's liberalism. That goes to show that the catastrophic failure of the Democratic Party in allowing it to come to this, in taking loyalty for granted, it shows that the fragility of Judaism that is tethered neither to religion nor nationality. So those are the kind of statements that are coming out of groups that feel like they have been abandoned or marginalized by the current administration, where they have just kowtowed to the loudest voices of the far left in the room. And that does not represent most of America. We need to make sure we do that. And one of the joys of this broadcast is we're able to be that voice as well. We'll be right back with Tulsi Gabbard. Seculo. Tulsi Gabbard joins us today on the phone. Again, it's busy time for a lot of our typical panelists, those who come on, discuss all the issues that are happening right now. Tulsi, I wanted to get your opinion on this because you are a frequent guest and friend of Joe Rogan and the Joe Rogan Experience. You know exactly what it means to go on that broadcast, that podcast, and what it means for reaching people. You're talking about the biggest podcast on the planet by a lot. And we're talking about a younger sort of, I'd say maybe even a younger middle-aged group, you know, a different group. It's not just what we've seen even from your Logan Pauls or some of those that maybe age. This is, you know, our age group. This is people in their 30s and 40s that are listening who support and pay attention to what Joe Rogan has to say. And now there is flirting from the Harris campaign that they may make an appearance. I just wanted to get your opinion, someone who sat there with Joe, who spent multiple hours having these intense discussions. How do you think she would fare? And do you think it will actually happen?
Well, first of all, I think it would be great for both Kamala Harris and President Trump to go on Joe Rogan's podcast separately or together. I think it'd be a great conversation. I've no doubt about that. And as you said, Joe Rogan has the biggest podcast in the world. What I think a lot of people don't realize is how broad of a demographic, the span of demographics are that he reaches. Right. I have been in conservative, small rural towns in New Hampshire and had 70 and 80 year old women come up to me and tell me they heard about me from Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's podcast, a lot of people don't know this as well, is the number two podcast for women in the world, second only to true crime. Joe Rogan told me this, and he's like, I don't get it. I was like, well, you know, the thing that I think draws men and women and people of all ages to his podcast is he's a genuinely and authentically curious person. He really wants to have a good conversation, whether he agrees with his guest or not on things, and he listens. He really wants to hear what people have to say and what they have, you know, how people think about things. So I think it'd be great for Kamala Harris to go on. I think it'd be great for Donald Trump to go on because this is the kind of real conversation that would actually help voters make a truly informed decision before they go and cast their ballots. I would love to hear Kamala Harris in a 3-hour, 4-hour long podcast, which is the norm for Joe Rogan, so voters can see who she really is.
Yeah, I think it would be excellent. There was obviously those conversations early on. They were kind of in jest, but I thought it should have happened, which was who should be the debate moderator. Maybe it should have been Joe Rogan because of the fact, like you said, he'll come on there, he'll be respectful, he'll ask questions that a lot of us have, and he has his own points of view, and he doesn't necessarily toe one party line or not. And we've heard that kind of response from a lot of people who go on this broadcast like yours, who go on the podcast, and you're right, have this response from this large group of people. I saw an interview with Mr. Beast, the biggest YouTuber on the planet, who majority of his audience, he would tell you, is teenage boys. However, he said he went on Rogan, and then all of a sudden, everyone in their 30s, 40s, and 50s started approaching him. It's just now people's understanding of how big of an influence he has. But you put Harris in that situation, you put Trump in that situation, he's used to doing, maybe not a 3-hour interview, but he's used to doing pretty long form. That hasn't been the case for Harris. And of course, you know, we remember your time debating Harris. Sometimes it can go astray, Will.
Well, and I had this question for you, Tulsi, as well, because we saw as Kamala Harris is making this media tour, trying to appeal to different maybe age demographics than just doing the primetime news interview that's pre-taped. But she unveiled this opportunity agenda on Monday, which would include a plan to provide 1 million individual forgivable loans to black entrepreneurs, and they would be up to $20,000. She also was talking about the reparations discussion, saying that it should be studied. And we see as some of her support maybe in the African-American community has waned, you saw President Barack Obama trying to rally support in a way that we aren't used to seeing him at a rally. And I just wanted to get your contrast, because on the debate stage back in 2020 with Kamala Harris, you pointed out her record, which was so detrimental to these minority communities as the district attorney and the attorney general of California.
I got a few things to say on this. First of all, we're 20 days out from the election. If this kind of agenda was what Kamala Harris really believed in and trying to, as she says, you know, right these longstanding injustices, why didn't she do it sooner? Why didn't she make this a priority on day one as vice president? Why didn't she make it a priority when she was a U.S. senator, when she could actually enact legislation that would do the things that she's talking about now? Her record tells a very different story, and I hope the American people who are watching this look at her actions rather than this last-minute election-driven ploy to try to basically, I see it as a bribe, to try to bribe voters to support her. To me, it's a joke. She's talking about, you know, legalizing marijuana at the federal level. Look, I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs. That's my choice. But I don't believe people should be thrown in jail as she did when she was attorney general and a DA for you know, small possessions or use of marijuana. She says she wants to legalize marijuana at the federal level and that she will consider rescheduling it on the scheduled classification list of drugs. That to me just tells me she doesn't understand this issue at all. That marijuana should be descheduled completely, not only to allow people to make their own choices, but really to allow the kind of medical research into the benefits of CBD that we've already seen on so many people. It's more lip service from Kamala Harris. We're going to see a lot more of that over the next few weeks because she's clearly desperate and recognizing she needs to win over more support to win the election.
Right, Tulsi. And one of the things, I remember when we first met a number of years ago now, I said that I felt like our voting demographic, and you and I are similar age groups, are just searching for authenticity. We're just searching for people who actually believe what they say they believe. And they actually stand up for what they believe, even if it doesn't toe a party line. And I think you and people like RFK Jr. and some of these voices that have come out, our voices as well, that say, you know, no, that's what we're searching for. And when you have, you know, obviously all of the situations that come out of Tim Walz, whether his knuckleheaded moments, he said, or the things that feel like they're not true, or photo ops, or, you know, whether it's hunting or whatever these moments happen, it just, again, strips away of that authenticity. You don't have Donald Trump going out there and trying to pretend that he is, you know, a hunter. That game of politics should be over. And I feel like it is. And they're stuck in the past because we are searching for that authenticity.
Exactly. And recognizing that we can disagree on things. I'm sure there are things that Donald Trump and I disagree on, but I respect him for standing up for what he believes in and being transparent with the American people. The other thing is, you know, as Kamala Harris is being praised by people like Van Jones and others for this new Black opportunity agenda that she's rolled out, is President Trump is focused on lifting up all Americans, regardless of your race, ethnicity, your gender, where you grew up, how you grew up, your religion. And that's, to me, what I think we all want as Americans. We want everybody to do better, whether you're Black or you're white or you're Asian or Polynesian or Hispanic. It doesn't matter. We got to stand together as Americans and come together as Americans. And this is the opportunity that I see in President Trump's election and that I hope voters recognize as well, because it's evident through his record and the agenda that he has for our country.
Yep. Tulsi, we've been talking about this all day. This has been the broadcast that we've had. We've had this discussion of, it feels like that one side wants to categorize voters based on their skin color, based on their religion, based on their, like you said, their gender, their ethnicity. And it's almost a how dare you situation that you would not vote one way or the other. I'm going to let you go because I know you got a busy day as well. It's jam-packed, but we really appreciate you being a part of this team and coming in with incredible insight. And again, I encourage everyone who's listening right now, we have a few lines open at 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Hopefully you've heard from such experts like Tulsi today that you want to have your voice heard as well. If you got questions, if you have comments based on any of the topics we talked about today, I'd be happy to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. And again, I want to encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. I'm going to be talking about that a lot. Look, as we head into November and December, those are the most important months of the year for us for fundraising. But right now, just due to the nature of the economy, due to the nature of the elections and other distractions that are happening in this world, and look, they are, sometimes you may need a reminder. So I'm going to encourage you, support the work of the ACLJ if you can financially. If you can't financially, I understand right now it's real tough for a lot of people. But if you're watching online, hit that thumbs up. Hit the subscribe. It's free. Helps us out tremendously because more people get to see this broadcast. More people get your point of view shared to them by doing that. I know it's it feels redundant. It feels like something that a 15-year-old YouTuber would say, but understand that it really does a massive amount of work. We've seen millions of people watch this broadcast each and every week, watch our video content each and every week. Millions. And that would not be without your support. So whether that's financial or whether that is just hitting that thumbs up, we're at 929 right now. During this break, let's get that over 1,000. If you want to comment, comment. If you don't know what to comment, what we always do here is say, tell me where you're watching from. Because we have people from around the world. And of course, as always, if you want to, you can send in those clowns. Do it right now and visit ACLJ.org. Incredible content from people like Tulsi Gabbard that gets posted on there each and every day. Follow along and share it with your friends. We'll be right back with your voice on Secula. Welcome back to Secula. Now it's time to hear from you. We're going to take as many calls as we can. We still have a chance to call in. You got a couple lines open. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Don, who's calling in California on line one. He's listening on the radio. Don, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. Gosh, I'm a huge Secula fan, a huge Pompeo fan. So how can I go wrong? What a day for me. You know, I was telling you, a great screener. I was looking at the latest issue of Commentary magazine, and on the cover they have a picture of the Israeli flag, a picture of the Ukrainian flag, and the headline is, "Why Won't We Let Them Win?" And it just kills me as an American to see the division. The Democrats don't want to support Israel. Republicans don't want to support Ukraine, or a lot of them. And it really bothers me. You know, these are friendly countries, peaceful countries that are under attack. And if we won't even, as the world's strongest free nation, if we don't even want to send them the weapons to defend themselves, who are we? It just kills me. It kills me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way, Don. And Don, Commentary magazine, by the way, is a Jewish magazine, if you're unfamiliar with it. But it does feel that way. But also because, well, we're in this sort of endless war scenario, and it feels like we've fallen in love with that.
Well, and I feel like if you were to ask two of our guests today, Mike Pompeo or Tulsi Gabbard, they may have completely different answers on why we won't let them win. But I do think that to some degree, the Biden administration, along with the way that they continue these wars, is that by slow rolling, sending arms shipments to nations, even like Israel, that we have these great alliances with and agreements with, that it does prolong these wars instead of ending them more quickly. But I think you also have to look at the way that the party politics of the party in power has played this out. And they are allowing it to continue longer because they're on both sides of the fence when it comes to who they support, when it comes to the deep-rooted pro-Palestinian wing, the Hamas caucus within the Democrat Party. They are trying to have it both ways, to not anger their base ahead of an election, but also to not completely abandon our greatest ally in the Middle East, Israel, of which we have many tech and healthcare agreements with. We get a lot of technology from Israel and share technology. So they're not trying to completely shut them off. But there is a lot of personal spats as well between Netanyahu and Biden. You see that all across the news. But I think what it does boil down to is that the United States right now is more comfortable with the slow roll, the slow boil of war under this administration, instead of like what Trump did when he got in and he said, ISIS, let's just go ahead and airstrike like crazy, wipe them out. And what happened? You saw ISIS go away until the Biden administration, and then ISIS started to regain footholds. We saw that there was that planned Election Day terror attack that they subverted. They arrested the man in Oklahoma. He was from Afghanistan. They originally claimed that they had vetted him to get his special interest immigrant status to get in the United States. But then it later comes out they never vetted him, which is what we were concerned about all along. Who was he connected to? ISIS-K, the same ISIS organization that killed 13 Americans at the Abbey Gate.
Yep. All right. So let's continue on with some of these calls. Cheryl's calling on line three. Listen on Sirius XM. Cheryl, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
From Mississippi.
Great. Go ahead. Thank you so much for calling. Go ahead with your comment.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I proudly did my patriotic duty this morning and absentee voted, and proud to say that I voted for President Trump. And I believe many people really need to search their hearts and search the truth before they get to the voting precinct and do what's really best for this country. I know a lot of people that in my husband's line of work, they only vote for their job, how it affects their job. And you've got to look at it as the whole spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely, Cheryl. We appreciate you calling in. And I think a lot of people are doing that. They're looking at how the world is going. Now, look, should you vote based on how it affects you? I'm sure. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. Most people do that. They look at the economy and decide, okay, what's best for me and my family and who will do that? But I think there's some clear front runners there in terms of who's going to be more supportive of that kind of thing, where inflation has gone wild. But I also, there's some unique moments happening in society right now, Will. And it's we brought up a few days ago, that John Fetterman came on and said, hey, in Pennsylvania, we got to be careful because there are people like Elon Musk. And if you just joke around about Elon Musk, you're not taking him seriously. You don't understand the youth vote. You don't understand the younger people who really see him as, I think he said, as Tony Stark, as, you know, Iron Man. They see him as the great revolution coming in, changing space, changing automobiles, doing so much. And now we've seen, of course, Elon, who has become a very active, loud supporter of President Trump. He has had a very interesting tour that he announced throughout the state of Pennsylvania.
That's right. And this will be from Wednesday today through next Monday, where he is doing these talks in Pennsylvania, and they are free to attend. But there is only a few requirements of how you can gain access to them. And that is that you have to have assigned their petition that supports free speech and the Second Amendment. And you have to have voted in this election in Pennsylvania. Doesn't have to be for a candidate specifically, but you have to have voted already in Pennsylvania and support free speech in the Second Amendment.
Yep.
So I think it's an interesting play. One, as John Fetterman brings up, you can't discount the popularity of someone like Elon Musk. But it's also an interesting play to get people to vote early in Pennsylvania to try to combat the early voting or absentee voting or mail-in voting that you saw in Pennsylvania in 2020. So this is a way to get people that may be a little bit shy about the early voting when President Trump himself and the campaign has shifted from the only election day to, hey, vote if you can vote, when you can vote. And to say, like, hey, if you want to come see Elon Musk, vote.
You have to go ahead and
vote.
And look, early voting has begun, as Will said. I think it's very interesting. If they was doing that in my state, I would certainly go. I'm a fan of Elon Musk as much as the next person in terms of what he has done for technology and what he is doing in terms of science and healthcare. I think we need those kind of brilliant minds. I saw someone posted, they said something to the effect of, if Elon Musk would just quit spending his money on trying to get us to Mars, then, you know, we could stop the homeless crisis in the country. And while that's a great theory, it's a great thought, we need somebody thinking about how we're going to get to Mars. We need people who can be creative and can be brilliant and think about all the new innovations. Because you know what? To get us to Mars, do you know what kind of technology will need to be invented that will affect all of our lives between now and then? You got to start thinking that way. And you know, he's an interesting character for sure, but someone that my son's generation really admire in terms of his technology. They don't know anything about his politics. They don't know anything about his rants on X. They know him as John Fetterman said, as sort of that Tony Stark, the real life Iron Man. That's going to do it for our show today. I appreciate everyone calling at the last second. We weren't able to get to you. We just didn't have time. You can give us a call tomorrow. We take our questions or comments live each and every day. But I'm going to spend this last 30 seconds again telling you to support the work of the ACLJ, because that's what I do here. And again, that support can go many different ways. That can be becoming a monthly ACLJ champion. That's the best way. That's someone who's putting on a recurring basis. 20,000 plus of you do that each and every month. And know how much we really appreciate that. You can do that as little as $5 a month. Obviously, the donations are tax deductible and you can cancel anytime. But if you can't give right now, or you can give a one-time gift, which is also what mass majority of the people do. Or if you can't, just subscribe on YouTube. Follow on Rumble. It really helps us out. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Secular.